helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. When studying the Constitution, you find that the framers of that document were very concerned about the powers of government. We see that in the restrictions placed on the United States, the checks and balances, not just within government, but between them as well. Personally, I would like to have seen a statement like the one included in so many of our state constitutions, that all powers inherent in the people, but the 10th Amendment does a pretty good job when it comes to the government of the United States. So why were the framers so concerned with the powers of government? Well, as Lord Acton said, power corrupts, and absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. Now, as we stood by and watched while more and more power was centralized in Washington, D.C., we have also seen the corruption that has gone along with it. Federal regulators manipulating the message, then demanding that anyone who disagrees be removed from the public discourse. The use of federal regulators to pressure, even extort, private companies and citizens to follow whatever the party line is for those currently in power. Often because we, the people, and those we hire to represent us have no clue what the Constitution actually says. So today, I want to look at some more examples of the abuse of illegal federal powers and what some people are doing about it. Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. I'm glad you could join me today. Yes, my voice is a little off. I'm getting over something. But I've made a commitment to bring a show to you, and I'm going to do my best, come rain, snow, sleet, or a hoarse voice to do that. So let's get started. And of course, my favorite target right now is the Centers for Disease Control, which seems more about the Centers for Medical Bureaucracy. See, I talked to you before about the fact that Facebook was taking direction from the CDC regarding, COVID misinformation. I mean, there's documents that were published by Reason showing that Facebook regularly reached out to CDC staff throughout this event, requesting guidance on the accuracy of claims about both the fake vaccines and the disease itself. Now, at a certain level, that would probably make sense, right? If Facebook is trying to determine the accuracy of some of the claims that are being made, you go to a regulatory agency that, their stated purpose is to gather data about disease, how to control it and how to prevent it. But as we've seen more and more, the CDC is less about showing data about the disease and more about publicizing the political, in a political manner, shall we say. But for example, documents have been released showing that the CDC did not include serious adverse effects from their known issues related to the fake vaccines. So even before the surveys were rolled out in December of 2020, after the vaccine was first authorized, the CDC knew that myocarditis, a form of heart inflammation, caused by both the Pfizer and Moderna shots, and there were serious adverse effects that were of, quote-unquote, special interest when it came to the fake vaccines. Now, this data has been disclosed in a new version of the protocol they use for their survey system. See, originally, if you used VSafe, you took the shot and used the survey system, the VSafe system, and you had a reaction, they didn't include a lot of things on the list of options. So you didn't have a choice for things like myocarditis, stroke, even death. And there's over a dozen pre-specified medical conditions, but not the ones that we're seeing a lot of. Now, this information was obtained by the Informed Consent Action Network that has been working very hard to get the data about the actual safety and the testing of these fake vaccines. Now, why would the CDC not include these known issues with the or potential adverse effects in their surveys? Why would they leave those out? Well, as I understand it, if you are on VSafe, if you didn't pick one of the pre-listed diseases, issues, reactions, events. Well, then you kind of had this free form text, and guess what? That would be easy to weed out, meaning you could have, media doing reports and studies showing that, oh, see that it's safe. There's no issue with myocarditis. There's no issue with stroke because it's not in the data. Because the system for collecting the data was manipulated potentially to discourage people from actually reporting these types of serious conditions. You know, what's the old saying? There are three types of lies: lies, darn lies, and statistics. See, while the CDC did include this free text area, they've worked very hard to not release this data, to hide the free text entries. Why? Could it be that it showed that their study was flawed? That the basis by which they were telling people it was safe to take this treatment was flawed? Would that open them up not only to civil liability, but to criminal liability for hiding this type of data? Now, you would think that once the CDC got caught with this type of information, they'd actually do a mea culpa. Well, they haven't done it with other information. For example, doctors Fleming, Dutra, and Oliver from the CDC offered false data back in 2022 while U.S. officials were deciding whether or not to grant an emergency use authorization for the COVID-19 fake vaccines for children as young as 6 months. See, they cited a study that was published ahead of the peer review group by a group of British authors. The study was later corrected, but it was after the public meetings. Now, Epoch Times has a set of emails showing that Fleming, Dutra, and Oliver were alerted that they had spread misinformation. Neither the officials nor the CDC have informed the public of the false information, but some newly obtained emails show that these two doctors apologized to the one of the study's authors, Seth Flaxman, even offered to see whether they could include the new study in the CDC's quasi-journal. Oliver wrote, "I feel that we owe you an apology." Now, this was just 10 days after they had provided false information. See, using data from the CDC, Flaxman and his co-authors claimed that there were at least 1,433 deaths primarily attributed to COVID-19 among those aged 0 to 19 in the United States. The actual number was 1,088. So, okay, almost 400 different. That's almost a third. Is that really a problem? Well, the false data led the group that was deciding whether or not to recommend the quote-unquote vaccine to children as young as six based their decision in part on the number of deaths reported. And so it did have an impact. But today, I want to look at the fact that the CDC, they apologized to the authors. Why haven't they corrected this data publicly? They cited data publicly that was wrong. Why haven't they gone back and said, oh, sorry, our bad, we made a mistake, here's what we did wrong, here's the actual number, and go on from there? Could it possibly have anything to do with the government's repeated attempt to manipulate the death from COVID data? Everything from marking any death where the person's in a motorcycle accident, they get to the hospital, they do a COVID test on him, they say, oh, yep, he's got the virus, he's got the antibodies. So when he died from massive internal bleeding from a motorcycle accident, they list COVID as a cause of death. Or the fact that Medicare was offering hospitals additional, they were offering them bounties for CDC diagnoses, and especially for CDC deaths. This is the type of data that they're bringing out. And now what? It's one of the reasons why I don't trust a CDC report until I actually look at the data myself. Now, another example, not so much on the medical side, but remember when Dr. Fauci said that he represented science? Well, there are emails coming out that show that he was in a group that was attempting to disprove the lag leak theory back in the early days of the COVID-19 fodemic. You see, Fauci, who at the time was director of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, worked with others, including the NIH director, Francis Collins, Wellcome Trust director, Jamie Farrar, Scripps Research, Christian Anderson, and even Dutch virologist, Ron Fuker. I think I pronounced that right. They were investigating the early evidence on the origins of the COVID-19 disease, the scamdemic. Well, this is according to emails obtained by journalist Jimmy Tobias. And back in February 2020, Anderson wrote in an email that the group was focused on trying to disprove any of the lab theory. And I go back to the statement that Fauci said, if you disagree with me, you disagree with science because I represent science. If you are focusing on disproving something without acknowledging the possibility you might be wrong, that is not science. In other words, if they said, listen, we were focused on determining where the origins of COVID-19 came from. Was it natural? Was it a wet market? Was it the lab leak? That's science. I have an hypothesis and I'm trying to test it. Here we see that their science was biased because they were focusing on trying to disprove the lab leak theory. Now, why they were trying to disprove that theory, I'm not sure. But the fact that they were placing their thumb on the scales, that they were focusing on, we want to disprove it rather than finding out the truth, tells you this group wasn't interested in science. And Dr. Fauci was not representing science. He was representing his true colors, the bureaucracy. See, the bureaucracy didn't want the lab leak theory bandied about. Whether it was right or wrong, they didn't want people talking about it. We have other evidence of Dr. Fauci trying to suppress those who were providing evidence of a potential lab leak theory. He didn't want to hear it, and he was working hard to suppress this information. But by doing so, he kept details away from not just the American people, but scientists and doctors for whom this may have been very important. In fact, Anderson wrote a paper called The Proximal Origins of SARS-CoV-2, and it was cited over 2,000 media in over 2,000 media outlets and had 6 million views online, according to The Intercept. Tell me that isn't impacting people's perception and understanding. And add that with the attempts to silence those who opposed, who believed in the lab leak theory, and you have a situation where maybe we're going down research down the wrong direction because we assume there's an organic origin to this rather than looking at the science, including the components of the virus that are obviously man-made. And what about the attack on doctors, the war on doctors that are treating patients like human beings rather than being good little bureaucrats? See, the worst of this has been California, but you have it nationally, the suppression of a doctor's freedom to give advice to their patients is everywhere. And the doctors who have successfully treated COVID-19 with alternate treatments than those approved by the government, and have done so with huge amounts of success. I interviewed a Dr. Stephen LaTulip, who treated COVID-19 before we knew it was COVID-19. He said if you treated it, it was flu-like symptoms. If you treated it as a flu-like disease, he had a 100% success rate when it came to people not dying. But see, he was shut up for that. Dr. McCullough has had his license endangered. I think he may even lost his license or some of his certifications. Not because any of the patients he's treated had adverse effects, but because he simply said, this is what the science is showing us. This is what my decades of experience are telling me. This is what I'm seeing work. And not bowing down to the mouthpieces in Washington and several of our state houses. And of course, the corporate media has been all aboard with this, right? Forget the fact that ivermectin was shown to be effective in treating COVID-19 if used early. Note, the media named it horse paste and called people idiots for trying it. or the fact that the CDC's own data shows that chloroquine is effective in treating, as preventing people from getting COVID-19. But you see, that information was suppressed, that was hidden, that was kept from the American people. And now we're finding out that not only were the COVID-19 quote-unquote vaccinations not properly safety tested, but very few, if any, of the childhood vaccines were actually properly safety tested, with a blind control group placebo testing. But those shots are going into the arms of our children. And then we're told when anything wrong goes, oh, no, it's just a normal reaction. It's not a big deal. And in fact, I have an interview with a mother who is dealing with the aftermath of just such a situation. But before I go there, I have to take a break. Now, there are a lot of supplements on the market to help you do all sorts of things. Everything from get better exercise to, fall asleep better. Healthy Cell has a better solution, at least in my mind. See, their REM sleep supplement is designed to support all four stages of sleep. Helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep deeply so you can wake rested and refreshed and ready to go. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order from Healthy Cell, including the REM sleep if you want. Just go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So again, go to HealthyCell.com, put your cart together, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know you listen to America Out Loud, and you'll get 25% off your first order.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan. A plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, ICSC-climate.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You rejoined the Constitution study. I'm glad you did. I thank you. You know, the first segment we talked about, a lot about the government suppressing information, using their positions to manipulate the news and some of the outcomes of that, and how doctors are treated, and in some cases how doctors are losing their careers. But we don't often think about the other things that have come out of COVID-19. I mean, sure, it has brought about some more wariness when it comes to quote-unquote vaccines. I point out that neither the Pfizer nor Moderna treatment is actually legally a vaccine. But it brings into question, what is the safety testing done? And, you know, the idea of serious side effects to vaccines is nothing new. It's been talked about for, well, for decades. So while I was at the Reawaken America tour, I bumped into somebody who was kind enough to allow me to interview her. Her name is Tracy Slepcevic. She has an interesting story and a book she's releasing, and I think you'll enjoy this interview.
At the Reawaken America tour in Nashville, Tennessee, I have Tracy Slepcevic.
Yes.
Hey. She joined us here. She's got a book out. The ebook is out. The paperback is coming out shortly, called Warrior Mom, A Mother's Journey in Healing Her Son with Autism. And of course, with all the discussion we've been having about the COVID fake vaccines, you've learned a lot from having to deal with the aftermath of other vaccines.
Yeah. So my son regressed after his MMR when he was 1 year old.
Wow.
After he met all his milestones, he regressed into a state of autism. First, he broke out in a full body rash. Then he had a fever for 5 days. Pediatrician was telling me how normal it was.
Wait. So a pediatrician said a fever and full body rash is normal.
Yes. She said he was just probably having a little reaction to, you know, an ingredient in one of the vaccines. Don't worry about future vaccines. He'll be fine. And then when he started to regress and lose all his speech and some motor skills and cognitive abilities, she said that was normal too.
Sounds like these doctors have a very strange sense of normal.
Yeah, they do. I have to agree. But then even when Noah was 3 years old, after I spent 2.5 years trying to figure out what's wrong with my son, and being kicked around by a pediatrician, Harbor Regional Center lost our paperwork, several preschools, I'm sorry, we can't care for your kid, he's got special needs. You know, I went in at when he was three for his well baby visit and asked the hard question, is it possible my kid could have autism? And she just straight looked at him and said, no, he's fine. He just needs speech. Didn't ask me a single question, barely looked at him, nothing. And then when I finally found out that my son did have autism after he was evaluated through the school district, she went back into his medical records and noted in his medical records three times that she recommended an evaluation. So talk about doctoring records. She got read the Riot Act, and I scolded her about as good as I could. And I said, I'm not going to waste any more time on you. It's time for me to heal my child.
Yeah, this whole idea, I was actually having this conversation with a group of people in a local hospital yesterday. We've turned medicine into a bureaucracy.
Yes.
And, you know, you follow the steps, and we don't practice medicine anymore. It's hard to find a doctor that practices medicine. It's, this is okay, this is the schedule. And yeah, in some people, whether it was the active ingredient of the vaccine or something else in the treatment, that should be something you're aware of, because you want to avoid things that you have bad reactions to.
Yes.
So you said you worked on helping your son. How did you help your son?
So I always say, when you're at your worst, or I've been at my worst, God always sends me angels. Mm-hmm. And he sent me some amazing people that just came into my life to change my direction and my path. So the day that I found out Noah had autism, my very dear friend and naturopathic doctor, whose office was adjacent to ours, I saw him in the hallway, and he saw me crying, and he asked what was wrong. And I told him, my son's, you know, Noah's got autism. And he looks me dead in the eye and he says, Noah's going to be okay. I want you to go home. I want you to do your homework. kids are making great strides with biomedical intervention. And at that time, I knew a lot about nutrition, but I didn't know what biomedical intervention was. And it's really about treating the underlying biological issues that are, you know, presenting all these different symptoms, like loss of speech and motor skills and cognitive ability.
In other words, you go for the root cause. What is the root of the problem? And let the symptoms come from fixing the root of the problem.
Instead of coating it with pharmaceuticals and drugs.
That's wonderful. So how's your son doing today?
So he's 17. He's fully functioning.
Excellent.
He's doing great. He's going to graduate from high school this year. He's brilliant. He's an honor roll student. He's a loving young man.
Excellent.
He's so wonderful. And he can drive, he can cook for himself, he can take care of himself. Obviously, he's home with his cousin who's only 19 years old or so. So he does great. He's really come a very long way. Will autism always be a part of his life? Yes, and he honors that. I think he uses it to his advantage because he's fully functioning, but it's still a big part of our lives, and he's doing so well. But it was, you know, all these doctors and specialists and scientists and researchers that stuck their neck out there and put their lives on the line to create awareness and to go against the narrative. Mm-hmm. Now, does my son think his parents are conspiracy theorists? Absolutely.
Well, I'm sitting here. I don't see a tinfoil hat.
I know. So he's like, I love you, Mom. I'm so proud of you for writing the book. But, you know, he's like, I don't really understand it. So I'm just going to do my own thing. And that's great. I think he's done so wonderfully over the years. And he's gone through a lot. I mean, he's endured IV treatments, therapies, whatever. And anytime I tell him you have to do something, he's like, no problem, okay. And it blows my mind. Because back in the day when I was younger, if you wanted to stick a needle in me all the time, I would have been like, you know? So I'm super proud of him in how far he's come.
That's wonderful. So once again, this is Terry Slepcevic, warrior mom, a mother's journey in healing her son with autism. I for my audience, I mean, yes, we focus mostly on the Constitution, but we have to deal with the aftermath of our decisions. And one of them may be, how do we not just curl up in the ball because something bad happened? How do we deal with that? And I think you've been an excellent example of that.
You know what? You set a clear intention to do something. I believe you can accomplish anything. So until the 31st of this month, my ebook will be available for download for only 99 cents.
And where can they get that?
So you can go wherever ebooks are sold.
Okay.
You can look up Warrior Mom, A Mother's Journey in Healing Her Son with Autism, or you can go to my website, warriormom.org.
Okay.
And it gives you all the different sites under the book tab as to, you know, where you can click on it. And it'll take you directly to ordering my book.
Great. And then the paperback is coming out.
The paperback will be out April 4th. And April is Autism Awareness Month. So we planned it that way. And it's a beautiful journey. It's a labor of love, writing a book and raising an amazing son. And I'm so blessed. I truly feel like God put me on this path for a very special reason. And it's really to educate parents. You know, it talks about my journey of healing and the inspiration. And I mean, me and my husband lost everything. We went broke. He fights insurance companies. So eventually they fought back, and we lost his business of 20 years, our home, but I bartered for treatments. I did whatever I had to do, and money wasn't an obstacle, because I offered to make payments for treatments, and I did people's marketing for them. I did whatever no joke, nothing was standing in my way. And then the second part of my book is very much a guidebook to parents. What do you do when you think your kid could have autism? I mean, what are your resources? Where do I go? You know, how do I get evaluated for my, you know, an evaluation for my child? And then the third part is all about the different healing modalities that I used. And there's so many more. Every time I turn my head, there's like a new one. But for the most part, the main ones that they use to treat the underlying conditions are written in the book. And I do have a chapter on vaccines, but it really goes into the history of vaccines, paints a picture for those, talks about Dr. Andrew Wakefield's story, who wrote the foreword for my book. He's just an amazing doctor, and he literally has given up his medical license and risked his life to create awareness.
Wow. So you're not alone.
I'm not alone. No.
But, you know, as John Quincy Adams says, the duty is ours, the results are God's. I'm glad you've gotten well results. I wish you all the luck with the book so that other people know it's not, you know, autism is not, the autism diagnostic is not the end.
No, it's not the end all be all. And that's what I say in my book. An autism diagnosis is not the end of your child. It is only the beginning, but it's all going to be in how it is that you choose to take it on.
Well, Tracy, thank you very much for spending some time here. It's quite a noisy room we're in.
Okay.
Good luck with the book.
So much.
Interviews. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, Tracy truly was a pleasure to speak with, to learn about. She was dealing with a side effect of the MMR vaccine. And that led her to, it led her down a path that she didn't let take control of her life. When the doctors refused to show any concern for the effects that her son was dealing with after the vaccine, she said, I got to take care of my son. I have to find a way to treat this. I have to find a way to deal with this. And that's kind of what she did. She found something that worked for her. And she has, she's letting other people know. Now, again, it's not just that her son got autism correlated with taking an MMR vaccine. You know, it bothered me that such drastic changes in a child's life were basically brushed aside by the medical community. It reminds me of why I say we no longer doctors. Sometimes don't practice medicine, they practice bureaucracy. You know, the bureaucracy said, there may be some side effects, there may be some reactions, it's all normal. You know, almost a pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, just keep pumping this stuff out, which that's not practicing medicine. And I'm glad that her son is doing well, that she's found ways for him to be as functional as he can. And I would encourage those out there who believe they've had or a family member has had an adverse reaction to any vaccine to not take it as the end of the world. You know, to recognize you know your child better than anyone else. You should look at what's going on and don't let the doctors simply tell you to ignore what is right in front of your eyes. I remember when my father-in-law was ill, and I actually talked to my mother-in-law. I love them both dearly. And I told her, I said, listen, I understand you're not a confrontational person when it comes to doctors. If you need someone who is, I will step up and do it. Because, you know, I was not thrilled with the level of treatment he was getting. Again, it's very bureaucratic. Now again, he passed, she's passed, but it's this idea that, doctors are not gods. They may act that way sometimes, but they're not. They're there to advise you, but it's still your body. And, to take a line from the pro-choice movement, my body, my choice, which also means I think I have to take some responsibility for what treatments I accept and what level of information do I need before I accept any specific treatment. You know, it's funny, our the physician's assistant we used to go to. They sold the practice, and now there's someone new. And my wife and I just went to see her for our first meeting. And of course, you know, I'm evaluating her. Is she listening to what my wife and I are saying? Is she informing us about things? Or is she simply, you know, reading off a chart? Okay, this number says this, so you take this drug and, you know, thank you very much. And I'm happy to say that she didn't really do that. Now, it's one visit, you know, that's not definitive. But when was the last time when you went to your doctor's office and you were, if not actively, at least passively, questioning them, looking at them and seeing, were they listening to you? What have we lost when doctors stop practicing medicine and simply do what the bureaucrats say? So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Mrs. Slepcevic. And if you want to find out more, go to warriormom.org and you can find out more. The ebook is out, but the paperback won't be coming until April because that's National Autism Awareness Month. Now, I want to kind of change gears. I want to start looking at other ways in which the explosive growth of government, especially the federal government, has led to them being this all-powerful government that makes all these decisions for all of us. You know, it's interesting. I was just being in an interview, kind of a point-counterpoint interview on Greg Bolden's program, and I thought it was great because we had two people with opposite points of view that were willing to talk to each other. But I think in some ways we both agreed that an all-powerful government, that simply trusting bureaucrats because they sit in an office or they get a government paycheck is not only not safe, it's truly dangerous. But before I go, I have to take a break. Now, I mentioned the Greg Bolden program, Bolden in Bolden America. He and I were voices on America Out Loud. We are two of several voices with lots of different points of view. And I encourage people to go looking for those different points of view. So yes, go to AmericaOutLoud.com. I would do it every day. Look for the news. Look for the happenings. Look for what people are saying. And then decide for yourself. But it's more important than you just go is we need to share this information. Help make it available to others. To take the articles, the podcasts, the stories, the videos, share them as far and wide as you can. Because by doing so, we help to secure the blessings of liberty.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow that said, "Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime and departing, leave behind us footprints on the sands of time." America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans, and thank you for joining me here at the Constitution Study. You know, so far, my voice seems to be holding out. Thank you to some green tea with some honey and lemon. But as I was going to break, I mentioned I want to take a look at some of the other ways this all-powerful government has caused causing problems. Now, I mentioned the Greg Bolden interview that we just recorded, and one of the interesting things, from my point of view, is an innate trust people have for government actors. I don't share that innate trust in any group. I look to individuals. And as evidence, more evidence comes out, I think I'm justified in that position. See, there's some newly released documents that describe how different national security officials were looking to flag what they refer to as election-related misinformation and disinformation. Now, here's the point that always comes to mind when I think about that. When you're talking about labeling things misinformation, disinformation, propaganda, whatnot, who is doing the defining? In other words, who defines what is misinformation and what is disinformation? I mean, it was misinformation at one time. We were told that to believe that social media companies were shadow banning information. We were told it was misinformation and or disinformation that COVID-19 came from a lab in Wuhan, China. It was misinformation or disinformation that there were serious adverse effects possible to the COVID-19 jabs. And it was misinformation and disinformation to believe that there were issues with the election integrity in both 2020 and 2022. Now, the attorneys general for Missouri and Louisiana are part of a lawsuit trying to expose and deal with some of these problems. And according to the Missouri attorney general, Andrew Bailey, he said that the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency has been, in his words, weaponized to suppress domestic free speech. Now, part of the work that these men have been doing is they've been deposing different people, and they released back on January 19th the full transcript of the deposition of CISA official Brian Scully. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole transcript, but I want to pick out some highlights that I saw on an Epoch Times article. Now, apparently Mr. Scully said in the deposition that the Multi-Domain Management Division that he's a part of, the MDM, works to protect America's critical infrastructure, including election infrastructure, by engaging with federal partners and civil society groups in an effort to mitigate risk. Okay, so far so good. Doesn't sound too bad. But Mr. Scully said that in 2020, we did some switchboard work on behalf of election officials. He explained later that switchboard work was essentially receiving alerts from different election officials about social media content that they deemed to be disinformation, and then CISA would route those concerns to social media companies. Now, he did say it was just to make sure that social media companies were aware of potential disinformation. However, there was an understanding that social media platforms would then apply their moderation policies to that content, suggesting that the content was being primed for suppression. Now, the transcript refers to several attachments that were not included. So when we read the quote, he says, here Twitter actioned or censored accounts under the civic integrity policies after CISA flagged them. And then they showed a redacted screenshot of correspondence between a Twitter employee and someone at CISA, neither of whom were identified. I find this interesting because we're talking, again, 2020. Was that about the time that I got my account suspended on Facebook? Now, what was I teaching at the time? Oh, yeah. I was teaching what the Constitution and laws of the United States say about how we actually elect a president. Now, I don't know. I'd love to go through this list. I'd love to see if the Constitution study is one of the platforms that was censored, one of the accounts that was censored for actually teaching people what the Constitution says about how we elect a president. The deposition also showed that CISA liaised with other entities, including partner organizations like Department of Homeland Security, the Center for Internet Security, and the Election Integrity Partnership, which is a collaboration between Stanford University and the University of Washington, Graphica, and the Atlantic Council. Now, EIP later released a report on the mis- and disinformation around the 2020 election, which the group said details how misleading narratives and false claims about voting coalesced into the meta-narrative of a stolen election, which propelled the January 6, 2021, they referred to as an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Now, I am kind of curious at what information they're talking about. Could it be that at least four states violated the U.S. Constitution by appointing presidential electors in a manner determined not by the legislature of the state, but by the courts or the executive branch of the state? Is that the misleading narratives? Is that the false claim about voting that coalesced into this meta-narrative? Is it the evidence and examples of fraud during some of the state elections? Fraud that is quite obvious, where you have counts being done in secret, potential of fraud, where you have ballots magically appearing, where you have video evidence of people stuffing ballot boxes or mail, you know, drop boxes. Is that part of the misinformation? Is that the false claims about voting that led to this meta-narrative? Now, I'm not ready to declare as a stolen election, but it showed me something very important, and that is that we, the people, need to be a lot closer engaged with our county election boards. If these shenanigans are allowed, they will continue to grow. And until we, the people, actually begin controlling the open and transparency of our elections at the county level, we're not going to see the end of these claims and counterclaims of stolen elections, election fraud, and general malfeasance. But I certainly don't think that it's up to the federal government to engage as an actor to help spread the information for these local election officials. They can contact Facebook and Twitter. They can ask that content to be suppressed if they provide evidence for it. But that's not what we're seeing so far. We're seeing them using the federal government as a friend of the government to promote their misinformation suggestions. And of course, there are numerous examples of the federal government, different agencies and departments, that have used their regulatory position to try and persuade private companies to act a certain way. You remember Obama trying to get South Carolina to allow boys in the girls' bathroom under threat of losing their federal lunch money? Well, here we have the latest example. See, the Federal Reserve has now called on prominent banks to conduct a pilot climate assessment for analyzing how their businesses would be impacted by climate change. Now, according to reports, during the course of the climate scenario analysis, the Federal Reserve will engage with banks to understand challenges they face, as well as their approaches to dealing with financial risks stemming from climate change. What business is it of the Federal Reserve to determine for banks how they should respond to so-called financial risk stemming from climate change? You're supposed to be a bank. You're supposed to be an independent bank. But that's not how they're acting. They're promoting a climate agenda. And with the recent push for ESG, environmental social governance, this is just another example of the federal government, this time through the Federal Reserve, trying to impose their will of the climate activism against private companies. I mean, I have to wonder, if a bank were to refuse to participate in this CSA or to follow the recommendations of the Federal Reserve, could that possibly impact their ability to borrow money from the Federal Reserve, thereby impacting their financial health that way? Now, generally, how do we deal with these things? I guess there's 2-3 ways, right? Obviously, you can vote the bums out. We don't seem to be really good at that. But there are a couple ways. One is through the courts, the other is through the states. Take, for example, an Effingham County judge in Illinois who was asked to issue a temporary restraining order to prevent the implementation of Illinois' new assault weapons and large magazine bans that were passed, according to the plaintiffs, in violation of several state laws. You see, the plaintiffs claim that they were rushing to get the law enacted before the end of the lame duck session. And in addition to this, the law violated the Equal Protection Clause of the state's constitution. Now, in writing his decision, Judge Morrison wrote, "Plaintiffs are being immediately and irreparably harmed each day in which their fundamental right to bear arms is being denied, and that this harm is continuing in nature." And he noted it wasn't just gun owners, but firearms retailers who are being restricted in their ability to pursue their businesses, their professions. Now, the judge believes that the argument that the law violates the single subject rule will likely win on the merits, which is one of the reasons why he's issuing the TRO. Now, as I said, that's one way through the courts. And as I said before, I don't trust the courts. The courts are just as much a part of government as the legislature and the executive, and they're just as likely to disappoint us. But I did talk about the states, didn't I? And I often talk about how important it is for us to educate our neighbors so that we get better people in state offices. Well, for example, there's a bill, House Bill 105, in the Wyoming state legislature that's designed to eliminate a lot of these quote-unquote gun-free zones. See, in Wyoming, both open and concealed carry without a permit is allowed, and it's not uncommon to see people carrying in Wyoming. But there are a lot of places with a no firearms allowed sign. One of them happens to be the state capitol, the University of Wyoming, and most other public schools and other buildings, such as county courthouses. This bill would not only make it illegal to create a gun-free zone on public or taxpayer-funded spaces, right, to restrict access to carrying concealed on these places, but it would make it a misdemeanor offense to try to prevent someone from concealed carrying in any of these places, punishable by up to a year in prison and or a $2,000 fine. Now, a lot of people pointed to a 2011 incident at a Starbucks in Cheyenne where a young lady entered the store with a small handgun concealed in her purse. When she dropped the purse by accident, the impact caused the gun to go off. And what I find interesting is, then why don't you fine her or punish her for not being as safe as she should with a firearm? Why should the thousands of other residents of Wyoming be punished for the bad habits of this 17-year-old girl? Now, I want you to notice that this law applies only to public and taxpayer-funded spaces. It does not, as I read it here, as I understand it, apply to private property, meaning if you own a business and you don't want firearms carried in your business, you can put up that sign. But public places and taxpayer-funded spaces, as being their own by the public, well, they cannot restrict a right protected by the Constitution of both the United States and the state of Wyoming. Okay, so let's wrap this up, right? Where does that leave us? Well, I keep reminding people that ultimately you are responsible for how you live your life. As much as we would like to put the blame on somebody else, that never works well. When you hand over your responsibility to take care of yourself, you hand over the right to decide for yourself, whether that's about a vaccine or which doctor you use or what treatment you'll use, what you'll say when, where, and how, or even where and how you'll carry a firearm. I'm not amazed anymore when I see people saying, taking examples of bad actions and saying we must ban the inanimate object because somebody did something wrong. In other words, we have to punish the innocent for the acts of the guilty. Now, recently, there have been several mass shootings. And again, I've been in interviews talking about that. And like, those are terrible. But why are you worried about the inanimate object and less than the person who committed these horrendous crimes? Or why are we not worried about the doctors and other healthcare professionals who may be losing their livelihood, their job, their license, because they won't follow orders from a bureaucratic state? You know, when we turn over the decision of safety to someone else, we never seem to think of the cost. And if there's one thing that COVID should have told us, or I should say the reaction to COVID should have told us, is the cost may be quite dear. Not just the adverse effects from a fake vaccine, the infections from wearing masks so frequently, the loss of businesses and livelihoods when people were locked down, the loss of emotional stability when churches and other organizations were shut down, the families that were crushed because they couldn't be with a family member in time of crisis because of a rule made by a bureaucrat that had no scientific basis for being. Not to mention the people, young and old, who are being denied life-saving treatment because of some bureaucratic insistence that they must take an experimental treatment in order to that actually is more likely to cause rejection in a transplant because some bureaucrat said so. So I'm asking everyday Americans, people around this great nation, take responsibility for what you use and what you consume, whether that's news and information, medical products, how you handle yourself in public. Take responsibility. Stop expecting government or some bureaucracy or some agency to protect you from yourself. Learn to decide for yourself. It may not be pretty, it may not be easy, but you know what it will be? You'll be free. So I hope you'll join me on the Constitution Study. We meet here every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. All of my shows typically go to podcasts a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them on your favorite podcast app, but do me a favor, subscribe, leave a rating or a review for the show. It helps other people find me as well. You can find all the links at the homepage of AmericaOutLoud.com, but I hope you'll share them. Maybe bring a few friends so that we can get together next time and help secure the blessings of liberty.